Welcome to the Unsweetened SIO podcast. My name is Siobhan Harris. I am a certified integrative nutrition health coach and the founder of unsweetenedsio.com. I gave up all sugar and all flour on January 13th, 2018, and am finally free of my addiction. My mission is to help other sugar addicts find their path to freedom and live the sweet life without sugar.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 127 of Unsweetened SIO, the podcast. Really, really excited about today's guest and topic. So we have Molly Downey with us today. She's a registered dietitian nutritionist and a licensed dietitian nutritionist. She specializes in glucose control, metabolism, and weight loss. She graduated from Indiana University Bloomington and currently works as a nutrition manager at NutriSense, a health technology company which leverages continuous glucose monitors as a way to optimize diet, health, and overall well-being. So welcome, Molly. So happy to have you here today with us.
Thank you for the introduction. I'm super happy to be here as well. As you mentioned, I am one of the dietitian managers at NutriSense. So we are a health technology company and we utilize the continuous glucose monitors or the CGM as a way to provide better insight into a person's individual responses to specific variables like the foods that they're eating, the exercises that they're doing. You can respond and you can see your, you can see responses through, you know, sleep and stress levels as well. They all play out in the glucose data. So how it is all set up is we have an app and you essentially just have to scan in your continuous glucose monitor and all the data then shows up on the app. So then you can see it for 14 days at a time. It's different from if anyone is familiar with a glucose meter, where you kind of have to do the finger pricks. You're pricking your finger and you're just getting a single snapshot in time for where your glucose is at that moment. The difference with the continuous glucose monitor is that you're able to see your glucose 24 hours a day throughout that 14-day period that you're wearing the device on your arm.
Yes. So I'm going to stop you there just because first, this topic to me is so fascinating, just the technology of being able to do this. And I'm so glad because I think some people are probably listening. Most people probably know what a CGM is or a continuous glucose monitor. But I just, yeah, let's pause there on just like you said, it's different from the, you know, what most people probably think of is like you prick your finger and then you get that reading. But a continuous glucose monitor, talk about, yeah, what that is, you know, besides being able to look at it, but just how it differs from what people probably think of when they think of testing their glucose levels.
Yeah, definitely. So with the continuous glucose monitor, you place it on the back of your arm. So there is an application process where you have to apply it. And it may seem scary at first. I know I was a little intimidated the first time I put it on. It doesn't matter how many times someone tells you that you don't feel it, it's still intimidating.
So there is a needle. Like I just want to say, there is a needle. So yes, it's like such a mental game of like psyching yourself up. So I did this recently, Molly, and I have to tell you, I actually recorded it on my Instagram because I was like, otherwise I know I'm going to chicken out. Because the other time I tried to do it, it took me like 20 minutes. So I'm like, and it's pretty funny. If anyone wants to go look at my Instagram, you can probably find the video because I like, I'm totally freaking out. And then it didn't hurt at all, of course, but it didn't matter. I was still totally freaked out. So there is a little needle, but I want to clarify that that does not stay inside. So I think that's another misconception that people have. So it does prick you so that the monitor sensor can stick, but it does not, the needle doesn't stay inside of you. So
exactly. So the needle is just there in the application process, but then there's a microfilament and that's what's picking up on the interstitial fluid in gathering the numbers then from there. So,
and that's what reads. So that's crazy to think about too, that it's, that's reading the interstitial fluid. Again, like technology of this is just crazy to me.
Definitely. And with the glucose meter, that's measuring your blood. So, but then the continuous glucose monitor is measuring your interstitial fluid. So there is a lag time if you were to compare both devices, and usually it's anywhere from 15 to 45 minutes. So if you do a comparison of the glucose meter versus the continuous glucose monitor, but a lot of people do it for calibration purposes, and you can always, in our app, for example, you can calibrate the sensor if there's any disparity that's going on there. But yeah, I think with, you know, more ideas with the comparison there is with the glucose meter. Again, as I said, and as you mentioned, you're doing those finger pricks, which can be very tedious, and it's hard to get a big picture view of actually what's going on in your responses. So to help explain this, if you eat something with, and it promotes a glucose response, if you're just doing a finger prick, you're going to have to do a finger prick before the meal, you know, maybe 1 hour after, 2 hours after, to try to get a more comprehensive idea of how you're responding. But with the continuous glucose monitor, you don't have to keep pricking, and you'll see that data eventually just show up on the graphs, and you can see the numbers and how high you spiked and how long it's taking you to come back down to pre-meal values. So that's one of the primary trends that we're looking at in the glucose data.
Which is so amazing, yet to not have to prick your finger all the time, continuously throughout the day. How long does a CGM last? Like one sensor, how long does that last? Like once you get it in your arm, how long can you wear it for?
We use the Freestyle Libre, and it lasts for 14 days at a time. So the Dexcom, I believe, is somewhere around 9 days. So it depends on the actual device that you use, but we utilize the Freestyle Libre. So it's 14 days at a time. So it'll only pick up data for that time period. Then you have to remove it, and then you'd have to place a new one in order to consistently be measuring your levels.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's good to know for people, but 14 days of data is huge. So, and then like you were saying, NutriSense is the company that you work for. And I think this is so brilliant of them to like, so talk a little bit more now just about what NutriSense does, now that we kind of understand what the continuous glucose monitor is. Talk about what NutriSense does with them.
For sure. So as I said, if you place your continuous glucose monitor on, then you can have your smartphone and you scan in your monitor, and then all that data then is displayed in our app. We have a graph, we do meal scores, you have access to dietitian support. So anyone that does sign up for our program, they get complimentary dietitian support. So we understand that glucose data is complex and not many people fully understand it. So we have our dietitians and nutritionists as the glucose experts to help anyone reach their health potential. And we help them to analyze their glucose data. So for example, if say you had a high glucose spike from a sweet potato, we don't want that person to think that they can never have a sweet potato again. There are many ways to work around that to see if you can modify that response. So if, you know, without the dietitian support, someone may come into it blindly, see that they have a high response, and then eliminate sweet potato from their diet without knowing that there are manipulations that can be done there. So I think
they might unnecessarily eliminate something where if they had a smaller portion size or maybe paired it with some fat, took a walk afterwards, something, you might be able to, yeah. So yeah, it's really, I think that's what I love about the NutriSense is that you get that dietitian support, because like you said, it is very, very complex. But just to back up too, what I like is, you know, what nowhere have you said this is for people with diabetes, right? So I think when people think about testing their blood sugar or glucose, it's, you think, oh, that's for people that are diabetic. But what has really become a big trend now, and why I wanted to do this podcast episode and have been so excited about it, is that really using a continuous glucose monitor for anybody, whether you have diabetes or not, is just such a good way to get an idea of kind of data on what you eat, how your body reacts, and then being able to use that to optimize your overall health. So I love, love, love this. And NutriSense really focuses on people that aren't necessarily diabetic, right? Yeah.
Exactly. We do work with some customers who are diabetic. We don't work with anyone who is on insulin. We don't work with type ones, but majority of our customer base, they are generally healthy. They're utilizing this continuous glucose monitor as a way to prevent or just to gather more data on themselves. We have a lot of athletes. We have mostly people who are just very interested in their health, that are curious about their body to see what's actually going on. But we're using it. Glucose is such a great metric for identifying if there are any issues going on in your body. I feel like I'm a great example of that, and why I got so interested in monitoring my own blood glucose, for example. I was just having symptoms and was kind of feeling off and was going to different doctors trying to figure out all these things. And I started measuring my blood sugar levels, and I realized that my fasting levels were ranging on the higher side. So what I mean by fasting is, if you wake up in the morning, this is when your levels should ultimately be at more baseline value. And ideally and optimally, we want to be in that 70 to 90 range. And I was inching more towards the 100 range. And with my meal responses, so when I actually ate carbohydrate, I was responding very poorly to carbohydrates as well. What I mean by this is I was having spikes going beyond threshold. So currently within our app, and where we put the max threshold at, is at 140 milligrams per deciliter. And the idea is that we want to avoid high responses going beyond these levels on a persistent basis. And if they do go beyond these higher levels, we want them to return back to the pre-meal values within a 2 to 3 hour window. So what I was recognizing, and this is before I even had the CGM, I was just doing my finger pricks. I was doing the hour, 2 hour postprandial, post-meal tests, and was recognizing, oh wow, my glucose levels are going far beyond threshold when I eat these carbohydrates. Like, that was a signal to me that there was something going on. And then when I started testing my blood sugars with a continuous glucose monitor, I was able to recognize that, yeah, this is definitely an issue. I am not doing well with carbohydrates. So I was able to make modifications to my diet. I feel better. I feel better knowing now that I was able to identify at least one problem that was going on and make a modification to start feeling better. With metabolic health, and what we don't want is to be persistently seeing these high swings, as I was explaining. So if you have a high swing, it's going into threshold, going above threshold, and then you're staying in those levels for an extended period of time, say 4+ hours, for example. When you're beyond this threshold, that's when you're increasing the susceptibility to adverse issues that are going on in the body, such as inflammation and cellular damage and other issues that can further promote a disease state down the road. So if you look at it from that lens, what we're doing is trying to avoid that persistence so that the issues don't then lead to something worse down the road. So we're identifying yellow flags, fixing postprandial, post-meal responses. For the most part, they don't take too long to see improvement with. If you just work with different modifications, you can learn these techniques and tools and then utilize them to take with you, even when you're not wearing a CGM. You can know that, oh, I know when I did wear the CGM, I recognize that if I don't eat protein before my carbohydrate, then I have a very high glucose response. So moving forward, then you can just utilize that small tool. And it may seem small, but it's a very impactful tool that can help you your entirety of your metabolic responses and hopefully promote further issues down the road as well.
Yeah. So it can help you. What I'm hearing is almost immediately, like your experience, like, you know, people are feeling, say, fatigued or bloated or whatever. By doing this, then they might get some information, be able to make some changes and immediately feel better. But also it's helping prevent a lot of long-term sickness, disease, cancer, even anything that, you know, high inflammation in the body can cause, so many different things. So it's very preventative too, because once, like you're saying, once you're over that threshold mount on a continuous basis, that's kind of what leads to these bigger medical problems and metabolical health issues.
Exactly. Yeah. And I like to think of it as just a piece of the puzzle. Of course, everyone is so different. Everyone is so individualized. It's not always going to be the answer to everything, right? But it can provide you with more insight that maybe you weren't able to get elsewhere. And that's where I found success with it. Does it solve every problem? No, but it's like a nice, cool tool where you can identify anything that could potentially be off within your body and work towards ways to improve that. So,
and being completely individualized too. Like I talk about this all the time on the podcast, what works for one person might not work for another person. Not all diets fit one person, and same, you know, so this is, again, not comparing to anyone else. It's information about your own body, personalized. How do you respond when you eat a sweet potato? How do you respond? Well, for me, so for instance, I did this, talking about me a little bit, back in 2019, pre-COVID, I did it for the first time. And yeah, that's like when it took 20 minutes to get into my arm. I was like, come on, you can do this. Got it in there. And it was fascinating to me to see kind of the results. By that point, I had been, you know, sugar and flour free for almost 2 years and already was feeling a lot better by doing that. But for instance, one thing that I had found was I ate an apple and I was experimenting. So I was just curious, I'm like, let me just eat an apple by itself. That spiked way above that threshold. Whereas then the next day I ate the apple with some peanut butter and it didn't spike above the threshold. So it was really fun to kind of experiment and see, you know. For me, I've always known I'm more sensitive to like bananas as a fruit. And I know this is one that's really interesting for people. They might have a banana and it does nothing. You don't spike. But I eat a banana and again, it's like off the charts, you know, and there's nothing I can do to combat that. Even if a little bit, you know, just banana does not work for me. And that's fine. I've eliminated that a long time ago, but it's really good information to have. And it's very, very different person to person. So I love hearing other people that do this and figuring out what, you know, spiked them or didn't spike them, what worked for them. So it's really, really great information to have, because sometimes I think when people are trying to find, like follow a specific diet plan, it's not tailored to their individual needs and individual body chemistry, where this really is. Because another thing is, like you're talking about, is your sleep. And seeing how that affects it. I'm sure for women, their menstrual cycles, I know for a fact, you know, that influences blood sugar levels too at different points in your cycle. So all of that is just really good kind of information to have, but again, it's going to be so different person to person. And I know exercise is the other thing I wanted to talk about. People really interesting to see walking versus really heavy cardio versus strength training and what that does, where sometimes exercise really spikes people's blood sugar, but you know, strength training might not. So it's really, really, I think, just fascinating data to get about our individual bodies that are just, again, so different from anybody else. So then when you get that dietitian support, it's really unique and individualized to you as a person, not just the generic, everybody should eat 1200 calories a day or whatever, you know, so those other guidelines that are out there. So I love that.
Exactly. And you touched on a lot of great points there. First of all, with the individuality, after working and seeing everyone's data, it's truly, truly so individualized. As you said, I can eat something and you can eat something and we can have two completely different responses. So it's nice. For example, I was having poor responses to oatmeal, and that's what I was eating every single day for breakfast. And I was having brain fog, I was having skin issues. So I was able to just manipulate my breakfast to something that was more suitable to me. So instead of the oatmeal that was promoting this super high glucose swing in the morning, then I switched over to eggs, avocado, and berries. So this is something that's more stabilizing for my blood sugar and made me feel more satiated throughout the day. So it's, you know, I was able to make that small adjustment from there. And two, if someone is fearful of a particular food, for example, and they don't want to eat it, it can be encouraging too. If they come and utilize the CGM, it's like, oh, you actually respond very well to this food. This food, you know, if you've been restricting carbohydrate and you're not happy with that carb, because you heard it from somewhere, and you're not happy with that carbohydrate restriction, then coming in and recognizing that you actually have a pretty solid tolerance for carbohydrate, then that's encouraging in itself. It doesn't mean, you know, go eat McDonald's and go eat French fries every day, but it means that you can eat more healthy whole food carbohydrate sources.
Even for like rice, for instance, is something where some people can tolerate that, some people can't. Some people can do brown rice, some people can do white rice. So that would be one that you might be eliminating, thinking, oh, all rice is terrible, but it might not be true for you, like you're kind of saying, if you come in and try it out, you know, do the glucose monitor and then test and actually see. So, and that's like an example for me where I can tolerate rice, but in a smaller measurement, like not doing a full serving, like maybe a half serving works better for me, and definitely with some protein and fat, that always helps. But yeah.
Exactly. And with experimentation, while using the continuous glucose monitor, you can find what works for you. So maybe you responded poorly to a cup of rice, but then maybe you tried out another experiment where you ate some protein along with it and reduce that portion size in half, and you were able to have a more regulated glucose response. That's encouraging for you to know. And then you can take that with you moving forward, even when, again, when you're not wearing the continuous glucose monitor. I think you also brought up an important point with the menstrual cycles with females. This is a trend that we see often, and it's typically in the luteal phase leading up to their menstruation phase.
Yeah, so luteal phase is after ovulation up to menstruation, just for people, yeah, listening. So that's like the second part of your cycle, basically.
Exactly. So that's when your progesterone is on the rise. It's very, very common to be more reactive to carbohydrates at this time. And I will see that females will do completely fine with a particular food. They eat it every day. And then in this week leading up to their menstrual cycle, they have more pronounced responses to those foods that are otherwise tolerated really well. So in this case, that's informative to know that, okay, maybe I sticking to, you know, lower carb meals leading up to my period are going to be more sustainable for me. And again, it just depends on the person. So that's why it's nice working with the dietitian. So you can kind of work on what works for that person. And I know it's easier said than done sometimes, because during that phase, you are definitely, you crave more carbohydrates. So just finding a balance there. But I think that is one of the most fascinating things that we see on the CGM. And it's very cool to see how the hormones play a role there. So
yeah. So not just like what works for one, you like versus someone else, but for yourself versus like one part of your cycle versus another part. And again, that's just information to have. So it doesn't, then you choose what you're going to do with that information. But I think that is kind of nice to know and probably a good idea. I was going to ask like, well, how long do you suggest people do this? Cause I just did like 2 weeks the first time I did it. Now I kind of wish I had done the full month, you know? And I would probably would think at least a month so you can get that full month data, you know, going when you're looking at your full cycle, especially for women, but having a full month is probably, you know, good.
Exactly. And I think at least a month is good. I learn something new every time I place a CGM because you never know what's going on in your life. If you're having stressors, maybe your sleep is off, what kinds of food you're eating, what time of year it is. It really just depends. So I think it's just interesting to be able to connect those dots and see and identify any trends that are occurring. You did bring up exercise. So this is a very prominent trend that we see in the glucose data. But essentially, you know, if someone is wearing the continuous glucose monitor, or if they are just doing the finger prick at home, they may identify that they have higher glucose spikes when they actually do exercise. And with higher intensity exercises, this is completely normal. Typically, we don't like to see levels go beyond 160 milligrams per deciliter. Essentially, it's not insulin mediated, so it is normal and common to have a higher spike from exercise, but it does not mean that that's bad. And it is very, very imperative for improving insulin sensitivity and how well we can actually tolerate carbohydrates and utilize insulin as well. So that is something that is very effective in improving long-term, you know, glucose tolerance as well. So exercise is fantastic. If you go for a walk or something, as you mentioned, especially after a meal, what it's doing is it's disposing of any excess glucose. So if you're having a higher glucose response and you go for even a 10-minute walk, you can see that your levels are coming down sooner rather than later. So it's very, very effective in helping get your levels back down to those baseline values. So I am a huge advocate for walking after your meals, especially later on at night. Timing of when you actually eat is very significant. So if you eat later on at night, and this is again, one of the most common trends that we see with the glucose data, is that you may eat something at this time when it's dark out, and you may not tolerate it as well. So you may have a higher glucose response and it may not come down for a longer period of time. You may go to sleep and you can see the roller coaster of your blood glucose throughout the night. And what's happening here is we have a decreased insulin sensitivity at this time, meaning that we cannot tolerate carbohydrates and just food in general. We just have less so of a tolerance for foods at this time. So you might eat the same food at night and eat it again, you know, in the morning, and you may be able to tolerate it far more effectively in the morning. So again, this is important to know, because if you do test out a food and you're maybe concerned because you had a higher glucose response, try it out earlier in the day and see what happens and if you can have a more solid response at that time. But yeah, the walks at night are great and very effective for if you do see these higher responses, for just walking and helping dispose of that glucose before before going to bed. Otherwise, it's very common to see those higher overnight trends.
That's so interesting. Yeah, to think about just the timing of the meals as a factor. What about, talk to us a little bit to back up a little bit about what is actually happening in the body then. So what is so bad? What if I said, well, what's so bad about spiking above 140? Like, what's the big deal? You know, like, so can you talk a little bit about more what's kind of, cause I think people listening might be wondering, what's the harm? You know, what's going on really?
Good question. So if you do spike above threshold, so we have it at 144 now, and that's just where we're at with current research. Again, everyone is so different. So who knows the exact.
I was gonna say that probably differs per person as well, but yeah. So yeah.
We have a lot of people who lower their threshold also to like 120 or something. So it's just dependent on the person. And we don't know exactly for each person what that max threshold should be, but that's just where we're at.
And it probably depends on your baseline too, because I'm sure everyone's baseline is a little bit different of what their average looks like. But
yeah,
once they do kind of say, just in generally speaking, then kind of spiking above what a good threshold is for their body, then what kind of happens inside the body?
Yeah. So I explained this a little bit earlier, but when you are going beyond this threshold, you're increasing that susceptibility for like oxidative stress, cellular damage, inflammation. All of these different factors are promoters towards different disease states, maybe cardiovascular disease or diabetes. With the persistence of this, that's what's going to be less ideal down the road. So if you wear a CGM and you have a high glucose spike just one time, it's probably not the end of the world. Again, consistency is what we're looking at. And if you are having persistent spikes, maybe 2 to 3 spikes per day, that's a stressor on the body. If you think about it, if anytime you're swinging super high, your body's going to have to respond to get your levels back down. And if you're doing that multiple times a day, then that's stressful on the body. Also, anytime you're having a high glucose spike, insulin is being released. So insulin is the hormone that's released in response to food and glucose. So what it does is it acts as kind of that lock and key to allow glucose to enter into the cell. Once it rises in the bloodstream, in the insulin allows it to enter in and be utilized as energy. Once that happens, then your glucose levels then start to come down, and we want to come back to regular threshold, and we do not want to stay in those higher ranges. There are, for example, the extreme effect would be if you have diabetes, having these higher ranges for X amount of time can be very detrimental to your health, you know, impacts such as like retinopathy or nerve damage. These are very common trends to high glucose values. So again, if you're having poor responses to carbohydrate, if you're not working to modulate that over a time, that's just going to progress into something that's going to be more difficult to manage. So it could progress into diabetes. It can progress into a more severe state of insulin resistance, which then of course can make it difficult to lose weight, which can make it, make it so you're more susceptible to these other disease states that can come into play as well. So there's definitely many working parts that are going on here.
Yeah. Thank you for kind of expanding on that a little bit more. Cause I know people, when I talk about this, have asked that before. So it's not necessarily there's like an immediate danger, but that's kind of what we know about eating poorly in general, it's not going to kill you, you know, in one day, but yet the consistency and persistency over time can really cause some damage. So that's really helpful just for you to dive into that a little bit more. I also want to talk about then, like, okay, so say I'm like, yep, you got me, Molly. I want to do this. I want to try this. This sounds really fascinating. I'm going to sign up. What do you do, like, once you're, get that glucose monitor in? Talk us through kind of, I know you, and we said some of these terms quickly, like baseline, threshold, kind of talk us through then how to actually use it and read it. And I know people will have support if they go through NutriSense with a dietitian, but just so people kind of get a general understanding of what a day might look like using one.
Yeah. So when you do place the CGM, I usually like to start out with just explaining the different trends that we're looking at. The primary trends we do look at in the glucose data are fasting values, as I explained. You're aiming for that 70 to 90 range, but there are plenty of reasons why your levels can go beyond this point. That's why, of course, working with the dietitian is very helpful.
And that's like first thing in the morning, basically, it's the fasting, right? So when you wake up in the morning, when you test right away, we're looking for that 70 to 90 range.
Okay. Exactly. And then your postprandial or post meal responses. Again, if you eat something, and what we want to see is that you don't spike beyond that 140 threshold. And we want to come back down in that 2 to 3 hour period. And in our app, we have meal scores, and even without the dietitian, you can kind of get a sense if that was a good response or a poor response. And then the other thing that we're looking at is glycemic variability. So it's the swings in glucose, as I was explaining. And those are what we want to avoid. And then we have a metric in our app. It's the standard deviation. And generally speaking, we want to optimally, we want to be below 14. Anything below 20 is okay. But just, again, this is something that the person can talk through with their dietitian. It's all within the app, but there's a lot of data points that they can look towards. But I think just starting with the basics, how are you responding to specific foods? The meal score is very helpful for that. And then fasting levels are great to start looking at, and overnight values are great too. There are many things that can impact your overnight values, and they change on a consistent basis. So it's like one night your levels may look great. The next day they might be super high. So what we're trying to do is identify what's promoting those higher levels. Is it the dinner that you ate the night before? How was your sleep? Did you take any medication or supplements that could be potentially impacting this? Are you stressed? There's so many different variables that can also play into your overnight value. So identifying what those factors are, and then making modifications from there. I would say for the most part, it's mostly the foods that they're eating at night modifying that is going to help most people solve their overnight value issues. However, there are, of course, more nuances. If someone has a greater severity of insulin resistance, if there are hormone issues going on, persistent stress levels, persistent sleep issues, then those are going to have an impact on like your overnight values as well. So I think, just starting out, just seeing how you respond to specific foods, seeing what you're spiking to, what you're not spiking to, testing out different experiments, as what we were saying before, like what happens if you just eat a carb by itself versus if you pair it with a protein, checking out which time of day works best for you. If you eat something after a workout, for example, you're able to tolerate carbohydrates far more effectively in that post-workout period. So for example, if I ate the oatmeal that I responded poorly to, what happens if I work out and then eat the oatmeal? I will most likely have a far more regulated response. So just testing out anything you're curious about and just seeing, because it's your data. It's your data to explore. It's your body to kind of understand whatever it is that you want to know.
Make a list of all the things you want to try. This is your opportunity. When do you suggest, so like, talk us through the, like, okay, so you test first thing in the morning. So you kind of get that, you know, whatever it is for the first thing. And then do you test like right before you eat a meal? And then how much time after a meal? What's kind of the recommendation? So if I wanted to like see if my breakfast, which I pretty much eat the same thing every single day, is this a good breakfast for me? How would I like test that meal?
So essentially anytime you scan in, then it, so the data is picked up on the CGM device every in 15 minute increments, but you can scan it into the app on your phone. And then with that, you can, that's when, oh, it looks like you froze for a second. With that, then you see it in the data. So typically your glucose begins to rise within that first hour that you eat something, hour or two, depending on the person's metabolism. And again, you can just keep scanning until you see the full data response play out, but it can take anywhere from, you know, 2 to 3 hours to see that full response. Even if you don't, you know, say you ate the meal, you scan in, you go do something for a couple hours, and you can always just scan it later. And then you'll see all that data. It'll come up. So you can check as frequently as you'd like.
Yeah. So that's nice. I don't know if I really even realized that even if you're not scanning all the time, it's still collecting that data is what you're saying. So you don't necessarily have to scan an hour after. You'll still get that data when you do scan. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So you just have to scan at least once every 8 hours for our app in particular, because the CGM we use only holds 8 hours of data, but it's fine. If you scan once and then you don't scan again for another 4 hours, all that data will pick up when you do scan it.
Oh, cool. I didn't realize that. That's really, really cool for people listening. Cause like when I have it, I'm scanning and I like, no one can see us, but every time Molly and I are saying scanning, it's like we're pretending we're scanning, because it's kind of fun when you have your phone, you got the sensor on, and it's like you're scanning your arm like you're at the grocery store or something. But yeah, I was scanning like all the time because I was just like, I want to know, but I didn't necessarily have to do that. So that's really good for people to know that might be really busy. You're still going to get the information, even if you forget to, you know, scan every hour or whatever.
Exactly. So yeah, it's nice that, of course, you're going to be busy throughout the day, or maybe some days you aren't, but you don't have to scan so frequently and the data will still be there. At least if it's once every 8 hours, then you're good to go.
Oh, it's so good. We're running kind of low on time, but I wanted to ask you, because you've kind of been talking about these overall trends that you see. I'm just curious if there's any other trends that we miss that you really kind of see with working with clients. And then maybe just some, I don't know if there's any like success story or something that really kind of cool that someone figures out from using one that stands out in your mind of, you know, maybe some, you know, besides from your personal experience, just from the other people that you've helped, you know, using this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we touched on some of the primary tips that I like to utilize with most of the people that I work with. So that's protein pairing, walking after a meal, consuming your carbohydrates after a higher intensity exercise, ensuring that you're working out, because that helps to improve your insulin sensitivity and carb tolerance. I think even the simplest things like meditation and stress management, some people respond very poorly to stress, and you can see that show up in the data. Anytime I do see that, I tell them like, this is just as important as what you're eating and exercising. Stress has major implications on with disease and overall health issues as well. So if you can identify that you're persistently responding poorly to stressors, then this is something that you should prioritize, and stress management and meditation should be something to prioritize.
100%. I want to like jump and up and down when you just said that, because it is like, I talk about that all the time. Like, it doesn't really even matter what you're eating. If your stress levels are off the charts, you can be eating all the broccoli you want, but you're not going to be healthy. Like, you really, stress management is so, so critical. And it's so cool that you can see that with some of, you know, in real time as you use a CGM. So yeah.
Exactly. I know, I am the biggest advocate for that. And it's not just from time to time. It's something that needs to be consistent with meditation or walking, whatever you can figure out that works for you, but it's so, so important. But yeah, I think meal timing, as we mentioned, is critical as well. I feel like those are kind of walking after your meal. You know, those are kind of the main tips that I encourage everyone to explore and test out in their own data. I feel like there are so many people that I've had, you know, positive success with, in what I feel to be the most, you know, beneficial is just finding those small things, right? It doesn't need to be these huge life-changing, you know, implications that are going to solve all your problems. A lot of what bettering yourself is, it's just these small habits that you can identify, start working with, and they lead into more and more positive habits. So that's why I really like this. Making lifestyle changes is a lot, and it's difficult, and it's intimidating. And for most people, they have these high expectations for themselves. So I always like to just start with like small things, and those lead into bigger things. And I feel like I see this on a daily basis with just, it's encouraging to identify these behavior modifications and just work with them and seeing the improvements from there. People feel better, and it's just nice knowing that they can take some, at least one thing home with them. So
I bet that's so fulfilling for you and your job, just to see, just how the little baby steps can really help so much. Like you're saying, it doesn't have to be anything huge, but even the little things that just adds up and can really make big differences. Well, I'm so excited because Molly and everyone at NutriSense is offering all of my listeners $50 off, which they can use. You have a monthly program, so they could do $50 off the first month, or if they want to sign up for a subscription, they can use that towards the subscription. The coupon code is Siobhan50. I'll make sure I include that in the episode notes along with the website, so you can sign up at NutriSense. And the coupon code expires March 1st, but I was really excited about doing this interview this time of year, because again, a lot of people are thinking about health now, you know, to the beginning of the new year and making some changes. So I'm hoping that people will really take advantage of this. And again, if it sounds like it's something interesting to you, yeah, please sign up, reach out if you have any questions. But it's just such a, to me, was, I just, like, my mind was blown when I thought about, wow, yeah, you don't have to have diabetes to like utilize this information and use it to help you. So it's just another really great tool that we have that really gives us some personalized information about ourselves. So I just love that so much. Thank you so much, Molly, for talking with us today. Is there anything else that maybe we didn't get to, or any kind of last words that you wanted to leave with everyone today?
It was awesome having this conversation with you. Hopefully it was helpful and your listeners were able to learn something from it. And if you're interested in trying, definitely doing one of the programs, at least testing it out. I encourage everyone to try out a CGM at least one point in their life, just because it's just information for yourself, and you can learn and observe and identify anything that's going on. And it's super interesting. But we do have an Instagram page. It's NutriSense.io. We have a lot of great content there. We have our websites, NutriSense.io as well. So feel free to explore. We have a lot of different information on our website. We have blog posts, we have different podcasts, we have just a breakdown of how everything works. So just explore and hopefully you were able to learn something. So
well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day. And remember, life is so much sweeter without sugar.